Now, Ian Jessup on CFAX 1070.
Welcome back. In this half hour, we're asking the question, are we paying our top civil servants too much? Here's something you'll find hard to believe. The top civil servant in the United Kingdom is paid about one-third of what the top-paid civil servant gets in British Columbia. Joining us to talk about BC's civil service nouveau riche is our regular accounting sleuth, Norm Farrell of the blog Northern Insight. Norm, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Ian. Good to be back.
Norm, when I read on your blog that the top civil servant in the UK gets one-third of what the top civil servant gets in British Columbia, I found that absolutely astounding.
It is surprising, is it not? Considering that the top civil servant in the UK is dealing with a population that's, more than 10 times larger than British Columbia's.
Yeah, or more.
Exactly.
Now, the highest paid civil servant works for the BC Investment Management Corporation. That corporation has a portfolio of over $100 billion, which it invests on behalf of public sector clients. Tell us more about this company and the people who work for it.
The organization came into being in the early 21st century. Previously, the management of pensions had been done inside the finance ministry. And they started off in a relatively modest way back in 2000. And I think the first year there was $1 million worth of salaries and benefits paid out. And by 2005, that had grown to $12 million. But since then, it's gone up rapidly. In 2007, it was $15 million. 2010, $24 million. In 2013, it was $41 million. And I found the rate of growth was somewhat astounding. But then I looked at particular individuals. So the CEO, Doug Pierce, for example, had average earnings, if you look at 2007 and 2008, average earnings of about $660,000. In 2012 and 2013, he averaged $1.4 million. And I think that's actually up over $1.6 million now. In 2007 and 2008, the Vice President Lincoln Webb had average earnings of $284,000, and in 2012 and 2013, he averaged $940,000, and his current rate is well over $1 million. Now, I had a look at Washington State Investment Board, and as you said, the British Columbia Investment Group has about $100 million, a little bit over that, under management.
$100 billion.
$100 billion, right?
Yep.
And in Washington State, my information is that they have a little over $90 billion under management at this point. So
it's
dealing
it's pretty even.
Yeah, that's in when you get into those size numbers, $10 billion is not a huge difference because that can be made up on just the individual choices they make instead of having, $500 million or something. They might have $550 million. And so at any rate, I thought it was important to look at the salaries of the people at the Washington State Investment Board. And the chief administrative person is somebody whose name is,
I think you got Gary Brubaker.
Yeah, he's the chief investment officer and the chief administrative person. The executive director is Teresa Whitmarsh. I've seen a reference on a financial publication to Teresa Whitmarsh as being the star of the Washington State Investment Board, and she made in 2012 $248,000. So the chief executive officer at BC was the BC Investment Board was $1.58 million. So that's obviously well more than $1.25 million more And
you know what else is interesting, Norm, is you've listed the top five people of the Washington State Investment Board, the top five people of the BC Investment Management Corporation, and for the top five people in the Washington State Investment Board, their total salaries are $1.2 million, and the total salaries in BC are $5.2 million.
Now, what amazes me about that is that when I list the top five at Washington State, I've actually got just about all of the high-paid people on that list. In BC, there are a lot more. They have 12 vice presidents at BC Investment Management Board, and that's actually more people that they have as investment officers in Washington State. So the BC Investment Management Group is way larger in terms of the administration that they do.
And the Washington State has no listed vice presidents.
That's right.
And how many? 12 in British Columbia?
Yeah, we have 12 vice presidents. That doesn't include the chief financial officer and the chief operating officer and the chief executive officer. So there are 15 senior executives in the BC board. Now, all of this might be acceptable were we getting astoundingly better returns. But in, say, 2007-2008, the BC board group averaged 7.7. No, in 2007-2008, they averaged 11.85%, and that's dropped in 2012 and 13 to 7.7%. So despite the fact that their yield dropped very substantially, the rates went way up. Now, if you look at the returns that the Washington State group is getting, it's substantially better. If you look over a 10-year period, it's much better than in BC. If you look over the last 3 years, it's substantially better. So the rate of return that we've got in British Columbia for paying these very high wages is worse than what they're getting in Washington. Now, if they had, in British Columbia, had the group been able to get the same yield that the Washington State Board got, we'd have had $10 billion extra income going into the pension funds. So we're not talking about small amounts. This is huge.
So we would have, in British Columbia, an extra $10 billion if our BC Management Investment Board was as good at investing as the Washington State Investment Board.
That's correct. So in the last 3 years, March 31st, 2013, BC IMC averaged 9.5%. In Washington, they averaged 12.7%.
Interesting. Norm, I have an email here from Robert who wants to know, are these ultra-high public salaries pensioned? If so, how can the pension be supported by the public plan? The fellow like Doug Pierce, he gets a public pension, correct?
Yeah, when I quote the amount of money that they're earning, I'm going from the reports that are put out on annual remuneration, and that includes the pension contribution that's being made on his behalf. Now, it's a good question, because generally we have a two-tier pension system in British Columbia. There's one for standard workers that's pretty modest, and then we have supplementary pensions that are provided to senior officers, and those are quite extravagant. Some of the arrangements even lead to a person upon retirement being given a large cash termination amount that I've seen going out, particularly in the health authorities, measured in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. So these people are getting large pensions, much better than on average than typical public servant, but they're also getting these payments upon completion of their term.
Our guest is Norm Farrell. He's our regular accounting sleuth on CFAX. He has a blog, Northern Insight, always has great information on it. We're asking the question, are we paying our top civil servants too much? Our number is 386-1161. You can email us at talk@cfax1070.com. We'll take a break and come back.
Invigorating talk. Ian Jessup on CFAX 1070.
Welcome back. We're asking the question, are we paying our top civil servants too much? Norm Farrell is our guest of the blog Northern Insight, and Ron has been waiting patiently. Ron, you're on CFAX. Thanks for waiting.
Yes, thank you. I'm wondering whether the Washington State gives performance bonuses to its employees. For instance, when David Hahn was head of BC Ferries and our ferry rates were going up and our services were decreasing, he was getting a performance bonus. At the same time, the head of Washington State Ferries had a salary of about $150,000. I mean, what's going on in this province?
Interesting question. Norm?
Yeah, it's a good question because the Washington State does not, they have much more control over salaries paid to public servants. As a matter of fact, they also publish every single individual's salary and wage package so that there's no secrets about what's being made. But I think, you know, an example of this kind of thing, the David Hahn one is a good example, but at the BC Investment Management Corporation in 2010 to 2012, in that 2 years, their rate of return dropped by well more than half, and their wages and salaries, the wages and benefits, went up by about 60%. Now, they have a system whereby each year they decide whether or not the person has earned the bonus or the incentive pay that they're doing. But it appears to me from looking across the public sector that if the systems of calculating these incentive payments don't work to the advantage of the individuals, then they change the system. So BC Investment Management Corporation had a few fairly off years compared to what they'd had been having previously. So they changed the method of calculation. Instead of basing it on a single year, they started basing it on multiple years. And so they can say, well, we didn't do as well this year as last year. Despite that, we have to pay our top people more money because 3 or 4 years ago they made more money. So that gets down to the governance model again, much like in BC Ferries where we've talked before, that between the two different agencies plus the ferry commissioner, there's 20 or so people that are charged with the responsibility of overseeing the management, the operating management. And those people are all paid quite handsomely to carry on their role of oversight, despite the fact that they barely get together more than every few months. In BC, I calculated that there was $527 over the course of 2011 to 2013, over half $1 million in directors' fees paid to the people that are providing oversight.
What would those directors' fees be, Norm?
They get paid retainers. If nothing happens, they still get that money. But if they attend a meeting, then they get paid further sums of money.
Well, I notice in your sorry to interrupt, Ron, but in your piece, you talk about directors' fees in the BC Investment Management Corporation exceeding $500,000, and in Washington State, it was $16,400.
That's right. So you've created this sort of culture of entitlement in Victoria that has just, to my way of thinking, gone out of control, particularly in recent years. We probably don't have to say that there's a mixture of patronage and non-patronage appointments within these organizations, but it gets very difficult for somebody to stand up and speak against the administration when they're in a minority on the group. So if you want, you know, if I'm sitting as a director of BC Ferries and I'm collecting $50,000 a year for a half a dozen meetings or fewer, I'm probably going to be pretty reluctant to get up and say something that's going to put me in bad state with the people that are the decision makers who may or may not reappoint me.
Anything else, Ron?
Yes, on several occasions, presidents like BC Lotteries, etc., have been fired, and then they get their performance bonuses in addition to severance pay. How do you get fired and have a performance bonus? It just seems to me it's no wonder that our provincial gross debt has risen from about $32 billion to almost $70 billion over the last 13 years of liberal mismanagement.
Well, I'll tell you another thing that I've been tracking.
Ron.
Another thing that I've been tracking is the payment of severance pay. Now, when they've been letting go senior people in Victoria over the last years, there's been millions of dollars paid out in severance pay. But I've seen situations where somebody's paid hundreds of thousands of dollars in severance pay and basically goes off across the street and starts work at another agency.
Yeah.
And so to my way of thinking, severance was originally intended as a person that's in lieu of notice if somebody's discharged without cause.
Got a couple of calls here just before we wrap it up. Norm, I want to get to Robert. Robert, you're on CFAX. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. According to the Canada Revenue Agency website, three out of every four eligible taxpayers file income tax returns of less than $50,000 a year. But what we have in this country is public servants who are the elite. What kind of a country is that where the people who work for the public make more money than the public that pays their wages?
That's an interesting comment, Robert. Thank you.
I think to some degree you have to be cautious about that, though, because, say, for example, if you look at the BC Paramedic Service, we've got a whole bunch of public servants that barely get paid for sitting at home because they may or may not be called. Well, what we have uncontrolled is the senior public servants, the people at the top who've been having their wages or salaries rise in BC on average over 15% per year.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, the general ordinary public servants have had their wages grow very slightly.
Yeah, let's go to Mehdi. Mehdi, you're on CFAX. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I want to say that, you know, we have this situation because we don't have a real opposition. Where the hell is the opposition? They are not saying anything. And they after election 2005, right away, they increased the salaries and the benefit of the politician in order to keep them quiet because they are having more than $100,000 salary, the base salary. Meanwhile, the median income for individual wage earner, salary earner, individual worker, is about $27,000. This is appalling.
And don't forget, Mehdi, that when Gordon Campbell increased the salaries after the 2005 election, he also froze for 10 years the minimum wage.
Exactly. They were saying $6 sucks, $8 is right, and the NDP was supporting those type of nonsense. And the reason we are having this situation because we don't have real opposition.
I certainly agree with that. I think our opposition has been far too polite in recent times, and I think there's not a willingness to get in and to dig through the numbers and to then try and make an issue of those numbers. Because I think, you know, I'm also doing some work right now on the fact that the public share of natural resource revenues has been declining steadily. Well, if you compare that to, say, medical services plan revenues, that's been rising steadily. So we're about, the trend lines are established that in the next fiscal year, the government will likely take in more from medical services plan premiums than it takes in from natural resource revenues. Now, that's, to me, considering the activity that's going on amongst natural gas, oil, mining, particularly coal mining, where we're exporting $6 to $7 billion a year worth of coal. But there's very little coming back to the public treasury.
Yeah, Mehdi, I'm up against the news.
I just want to thank CFAX for having this show. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We're out of time, Norm. We'll have to have you back when you finish your work on the public share of natural resource revenue. That's an interesting topic. I appreciate this.
Just gets worse. Right.
Thanks very much. Okay, that's Norm Farrell of the blog Northern Insight. News is next.